Good afternoon.
Good evening, almost.
Good evening.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here before you, and it's amazing to see so many people still here late into the afternoon. My name is Annabelle Chang. I am the West Coast Public Policy Manager for Lyft. Lyft is a community-powered ride-sharing platform. So what we do, our mobile app essentially connects neighbors with neighbors who one is able to offer a ride and one needs a ride. And that our vision long-term is that we essentially fill those empty seats on the road with people. So our goal is to reduce single occupancy vehicles anywhere we go. And so hopefully in Portland one day, congestion will be reduced and we will be able to funnel people into existing forms of transit through our platform as well. So I just wanted to make a quick note. I wanted to thank the Portland Innovation Task Force. They spent hours of their own, you know, free time really thoughtfully considering recommendations for the City Council. And we really appreciated the amount of consideration and thoughtfulness and research into other jurisdictions. I think I wanted to point out for Commissioner Fish, you asked, what are some of the finest jurisdictions that you would recommend? I would say we would look to Austin, Chicago, Nashville, San Francisco, Denver. All of these cities have embraced ride sharing, and it's really taken off in all of these communities. And we certainly hope that Portland will have these additional transportation options for its residents. So a big thank you to the task force, a big thank you to the staff, and as well to Commissioner Novick for convening that task force. I'd like to also take a moment and talk about some of the core values of Lyft. There are three aspects that I want to address. One is safety, the second is accessibility, and third is inclusiveness. So for us, the premise of the app, people using it, people wanting to use it, all of it is premised on safety, so it's core to our company values. So our background check provider is Sterling BackCheck. They do background checks for Fortune 50 companies, financial services, health services. They even do background checks for municipalities. So we are very confident in Sterling BackCheck, and if any of the commissioners would like to speak to their Vice President of Compliance and walk through the process of how they do that, we'd be happy to make that person welcome to talk to you. So they go through both a federal, state, and for me, I'm a former prosecutor, and I appreciate this. They even go down to the county courthouse to get the most updated records. So that's very significant. So I did want to clarify that. We also do a driving record check through ADR. We also, in addition, I think there's some real innovations in the space of transportation, and we've really raised the bar in how it's being done. So the first thing I'd want to note is that we have, when you request a Lyft, you actually are in the app, you can see the photo of the driver and a photo of the vehicle with license plate coming towards you. So you actually have, information, real-time information about the person who's coming to pick you up. In addition to that, you get an electronic receipt documenting where you went, everything like that. You have a two-way rating system. So let's say I get into a Lyft and there's burger wrappers in the back. That wasn't my most pleasant experience. I can rate the driver and give that feedback. So the driver's ratings over time, we consider, we want, of course, the highest community of drivers. And so that feedback is given to the driver so they can improve. And if they don't improve, we have the ability to immediately address that, particularly in terms of safety. We also have a 24/7 trust and safety team, which I think is pretty remarkable. And so if you ever had a major concern regarding safety, that can be addressed immediately. And as a former prosecutor, I really appreciate that we actually collect this information and can work with law enforcement when that information is needed. So that's definitely an innovation in the space. And then I also wanted to note that half our executive team at Lyft is made up of women, and it's women that make these fundamental decisions. So our legal team, our general counsel is a woman, our senior manager of trust and safety is a woman, our VP of product is a woman. We care about that so much that it's reflected actually by even our users. So one-third of our drivers on the Lyft platform are women. More than half, about 65% of our passengers are women. I think that really goes to show that there is trust and safety built baked right into the platform. So that's really important to me, obviously, as a woman. So I wanted to make sure that I addressed that point. In terms of accessibility, I am also extraordinarily proud of the fact that Lyft has unlocked transportation options for thousands of people that did not have transportation options before that were convenient and reliable. And I think that goes to show, that innovation is actually providing these options that just simply didn't exist before. And so the National Down Syndrome Society, the National Federation for the Blind, the National Association of the Deaf have all come on as partners with Lyft. And that shows our commitment to access. And so one of the things that I think is really fascinating is we actually even have a very robust community of deaf drivers. And that's giving a flexible income that's dignified. And they may have now an option that just, again, didn't exist before. So that's pretty exciting. But I'm also excited to share that we are working with Ride Connection right here in Portland. They are a local nonprofit with decades of experience in this space. And we want to bring the innovations of ride-sharing technologies to passengers with disabilities. Lyft and Ride Connection are actively exploring an arrangement to allow passengers requiring accessible vehicles to essentially use the technologies of our platform. And we believe this partnership captures Lyft's commitment to making sure that trusted experts give feedback to this process and that we can create more transportation options for Portland residents.
Ms. Chang, on that point,
yeah, absolutely.
Since we're getting close to the lightning round, do we have your commitment, your company's commitment, that there will be no premium that any disabled rider would have to pay because of this partnership with Ride Connection?
Yes, absolutely.
Do we have your commitment on behalf of the company that you will not operate in Portland until such time as the city council authorizes that behavior, that conduct?
Operate before the regulations are
adopted. Operate before it is authorized,
yes,
by this council?
Right, yes.
You, that's your commitment?
I want to be totally clear on that last question. This is a lawyer in me speaking, so I want to be absolutely 100%.
The question I ask Uber, do we have your commitment that you will not operate in Portland until such time as the council authorizes your rideshare service?
Yes, we absolutely would like that to be sooner rather than later, obviously.
We've heard that from somewhere else.
And I would just note, we
you've
also
been talking
do,
to the development community, apparently.
We do also have tens of thousands of app opens here, so we know that there is a pent-up demand for
Lyft. You furnish us with a copy of your whatever user agreement you intend to have in place here in Oregon?
Yes, absolutely.
And can you tell us just succinctly if there are any differences between your platform and, say, Uber's platform that are noteworthy? Are there any differences in how you run your that's not proprietary, but just in terms of how the customer would look to your platform?
Right, absolutely. I think it goes down to our vision and values, actually. And so our vision, long-term vision, is truly carpooling. So in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York, we've unveiled our carpooling feature, which is Lyft Line. And that idea is matching multiple people going down the same route. And you would also even, as a driver, be able to enter your destination. So the idea for us is we're taking cars off the road. That is fundamentally our vision. And I think that's a little slightly different than our competitor, but I just want to make that totally clear.
So you accept a second or third rider,
right,
in a trip that's already underway?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's incredible because states spend billions of dollars building high occupancy vehicle lanes that frequently go underutilized. And we are seeing in San Francisco, for example, half our ride requests now are people wanting to share rides, actually.
So as you keep picking up additional customers, does my fare decline?
You will know in advance who you've been matched with, and know your fare
multiple
beforehand, correct.
And do you have any, based on the recommendations that you've had a chance to review, on behalf of your company, do you have any objections to producing the data that we need to evaluate the effectiveness of this pilot program?
No, we do not.
Are you willing to require a permit and a business license fee before you put the driver on your app?
Yeah, absolutely. And we would require a business license. I think it goes again to the same question about how that actually works out, but we're happy to talk to staff about how that's functionally operates, but we do require business licenses in many of the jurisdictions in which we operate.
And I have just a couple more questions. I really appreciate everybody who stayed, and I do want to get to public testimony. I hope that we're asking some of the questions that you want us to ask. One of my concerns as a 58-year-old woman who has been taught since I was knee-high, do not get into the car with strangers, is about safety. And you mentioned that many of your drivers are women. How do you protect your drivers? I just Googled Lyft driver attack, and I came up with information in Seattle last year where a Lyft driver was punched in the nose and broke his nose. It was a male driver.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the statement from Lyft right thereafter was the passenger was immediately deactivated from using Lyft and has been blocked from creating future accounts.
Right, absolutely.
Did you pay the health bills of that driver? What's the other safeguards for people? Now, when we have taxi cabs and we have instances of discrimination where we had a couple that was asked to leave a cab for a non-permissible reason, we were able to then address that with the company. What are the safeguards both for the drivers, the passengers, and then what's your responsibility as a company?
Yes, absolutely. And so as a former prosecutor, I obviously care about that a great deal. Just as a quick note, the criminal justice system comes into play in certain instances like that. So we have multiple ways that we protect a driver, right? The driver knows who they're picking up. They know where they're located, not only just their PIN, but their GPS location. So there's also a record of that.
So they know who the driver they're picking up, because we don't know whether the passenger has a record.
Oh, the passenger absolutely does have a record as well. So
criminal background check?
Not the passenger having a criminal background check. But we actually do have all of the passenger's information, right? Because they are they've uploaded their credit card information and their name and their photo, and so we have that information. So if there was something that was ever untoward that happened, we could immediately investigate that. And I think that's actually a true innovation in this space, because unlike traditional industries, you actually do know the name of the person that's getting in, and we can resolve that as quickly as possible.
So what happened in that case last year?
I'm afraid I don't know the specifics on that one, but I would note that, we connect millions of rides, and we're confident in the platform.
Give you a chance to wrap up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I wanted to go to my third point, which is inclusiveness, and I know that is a core value to Portland as well. Half of our drivers self-identify as minorities, and I think that's an extraordinary number, and I think that's something that the people are now accessing this platform to come up with flexible income opportunities. So we have a significant portion, about 80% or so of our drivers, are driving less than 20 hours a week. So they're doing this to supplement, maybe their own personal business, maybe they're a teacher, maybe they're a mother, maybe they're even a retiree. It's an opportunity that just simply didn't exist before, and now they're also providing a service to their neighbors as well. So I just wanted to go back and say that, Lyft is absolutely looking forward to being part of Portland. We want to be part a community partner. We want to be part of the social fabric. And we're excited to see, the Portland twist on how Lyft will operate, because we believe that we are also individualistic and community-oriented, and we are excited to be here. And if there's any further questions that I am unable to answer now because of time limitations, I'd love to make myself available to any of the commissioners as well.
Where's home base for you?
I'm from San Francisco, but I've spent a lot of time here in Portland in the last several months.
Thank you very much.
Like to know what happened in that case.
We can find that out for you. But, there is, I just want to know, it may be a criminal case, and so I don't know, it could be public.
Yeah, I'd like to know what you did to compensate the driver.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay. I think there might be some hardy citizens who have waited to speak in as well, so we'll try to take as many of those as we can. I would estimate that we might be able to keep the council here till 6:00.
At least
we should stay in here.
Stay in here. Okay, I'm fine with that too. So let's dive in and begin.
Okay, I have a total of 46 people signed up. The first three.
I don't think they're all still here, but I think we'll proceed.
First three are Tesfaye Alame, Kadir Waco, and Stephen Entler. And they'll be followed by Cynthia Conover Farrell, Wind Dwyer, and Dan DeGrange.
Okay, good evening. Welcome. Go ahead,
Tesfaye. Okay. Let me start. Thank you, Commissioner Steve, Commissioner Amanda, Mayor Charlie Hale, and Nick Fish. Thank you. Well, don't count my name. My time's up. Okay. Most of the things that I'm going to say is included in our TFA package. But I'll try to read it, and then I wish you can ask me a question. My name is Tasfai Alame, and I'm a managing member of my member and one of the founder of Green Transportation. In 1997, we started 6 shuttles, and in 1998, 48 taxis. We have grown since, including we have grown to 59 taxis, 9 shuttles, 22 medical transportations. We are proud to provide several kinds of different kinds of transportation that are vital to service the different needs of citizens in all agencies requiring transportation. If adapted, the task force recommendation you have before you today will eventually put my company out of business. As you know, on February 11, Portland existing taxi companies were granted an additional 242 permits. Terms of the new permit imposed by the city mandate that 20% of each company's fleet be wheelchair accessible up front before requirements to 10% of each fleet. The task force has suggested reducing this mandate before to 10%, even though all of the city's cab companies have since February 11 made significant investment in wheelchair-accessible vehicles. Green Transportation has invested close to $500,000 wheelchair access 2 months later. I still have not received the vehicles. Once I do receive them, it will take about 2 to 4 months to brand equipment wheelchairs per city mandate requirement. In stark contrast, once permitted, Uber and Lyft will be able to quickly place cars into service if they are not required to follow the same requirement regarding ADA compliance or vehicle signage and branding of a taxi. It is an unfair that small businesses like mine must invest hundreds of thousands of dollars just to be able to get a few more taxis on the road, while 41 billion business like Uber is not required to follow the same rule. It puts taxi companies at an inherently unfair disadvantage compared to TNC, which have virtually no vehicle expense at all, let alone expenses. If Green Transportation goes out of business, our wheelchair vans will disappear. This will put the onus back to the city of Portland and unlimited and ultimately taxpayers to provide reliable transportation to vehicles. People of citizens require wheelchairs. We urge you to establish a level playing field in Portland for transportation industry and ultimately assure that all of the citizens are served, not just individuals with smartphones and credit cards. I just want to say that in 1998, you have played a vital role in establishing Green Cab. In 2015, if this recommendation is adopted, you'll be playing the destruction of Green Cab again. That's the two both things. If I can answer questions, I don't know.
Thank you very much. I think we will probably have questions for you, but we might save them so that we can keep going.
Okay.
Thank you. Good evening.
And we have the packet.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Okay.
Hello, City Council. My name is Kadir Wako. I'm the General Manager of Union Cab Cooperative. I have been in the taxi industry since 1998, when I started as a cab driver. Union Cab was established in 2013 after working diligently for 3 years to be issued 50 permits. Union Cab is a company affiliated with CWA, AFSCIO, and the Job with Justice. We followed the rules, we followed the process, and we did it right. We chose the taxi industry for our livelihood so that we may support our families and provide our children with the choice they will need to be successful. Deregulation. The removal of cap on permit will saturate the market and dilute the earning potential of all drivers, taxis, and the TNC alike. This will have a grave consequence on many of families or many families of drivers who are already limited in their ability to earn a living wage. A large percentage of cab drivers in Portland are immigrant drivers with limited English who depend upon driving and making a living wage. If they are no longer able to earn an income, their option for family survival will be extremely limited. Drivers and their family could quickly become homeless and consequently depend upon welfare. The burden will then fall on the city and ultimately the taxpayer. As we all know, with the taxi service, it is all about supply and demand. If all caps are removed on the number of taxis that are serving the market, the supply floodgate will open. Yet the underlying demand will remain unchanged. The result, a race to the bottom with no one making a reasonable income and a fallout of our industry, most dedicated drivers, not to mention an increased number of unnecessary cars on the road. We urge you to carefully consider the impact on drivers when determining the right balance between increasing supply and preserving family wage jobs. There is no turning back once the floodgates are open. And I have a thing second. So I want to say that, like I said, a lot of drivers that are not here today, like Darren said, that 2,140 drivers are crying inside right now. They might flood the city of Portland Street when these unsmart regulation and people with interest are trying to lobby for a large company with $41 billion capital. Please take a precise and a smart decision. I ask that. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Council. My name is Steve Entler. I'm the general manager for Radio Cab, and I serve on the Private for Hire Transportation Board of Review as the taxi company representative. I have been involved with Radio Cab Company and the private for hire transportation industry in Portland for nearly 45 years. There are many task force recommendations that should be reconsidered. One that is of particular concern to me and should be a huge concern to City Council and the citizens of Portland is the process for permitting drivers. The recommendation by the task force to transfer driver permitting authority from the city to the companies would be an enormous mistake. It is a safety issue that should be handled directly by the city and not by a company like Uber that has repeatedly demonstrated a willingness across the globe to break the law. Permitting drivers should include these basic requirements as part of the permitting process. The city must know the full name of the applicant. The applicant should notify the city about which company they will affiliate with and show proof of possessing a City of Portland business license. The applicant should also provide proof of a background check or any other requirements of 1640.090 as may be amended. A TNC driver applicant specifically should be required to show proof of personal automobile insurance coverage along with an attachment showing that the insurance company is aware that the insured is going to supply part-time transportation service to the public through an affiliation with a TNC, and there needs to be a notification process to the City of Portland in the event of a lapse in coverage. As a cab company manager dealing with auto accidents on almost on a daily basis, I can confirm that up to 30% of the accidents that involve our drivers occur with uninsured drivers. Personal auto insurance is easy to obtain, but sometimes lapses occur because the insured driver fails to make a payment. As with all other permitted livery companies, the city should be notified of a lapse in coverage and absolutely not depend on a TNC to provide that notice. Most importantly, the final approval of whether or not to issue a permit to a driver should remain with the Bureau Administrator and not a corporate executive that has profit-based motives that do not align with public safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for any of these folks? Thanks, all three of you. Thank you very much. Next.
Cynthia Conover-Farrell, Wind Dwyer, and Dan DeGrange. And they'll be followed by Jake Oja, John Orr, and Erica Jones.
Thank you all for your patience.
Yep. Thank you for waiting.
You're welcome.
Hello, my name is Cynthia Conover. I'm an adjuster, and I've been an adjuster for over 30 years, and I'm with Farrell and Associates Insurance Claim Services. So we administrate claims for public entities, including the Tri-Counties, Metro, and we also handle two taxi cabs. So I just want to say that this could be an adjuster's nightmare. Is someone's application on or off? When they pick it up, what limits apply? Who's going to get money off of this is attorneys. They're going to be arguing about the limits, whether you're going to the store and then going and picking up someone, and you can't even make a decision about if there's coverage, because an adjuster looks at coverage, liability, and limits or damages, and you're going to spend so much time trying to figure out coverage and getting in arguments over other insurance clauses, you're not even going to be able to take care of that person who has been injured, let alone how much are you going to pay them. Is it going to be $50,000? Is it going to be $1 million? And you really can't even get a claims manager here to say, oh yes, if this happens, this will be covered. So all I know is when you deny coverage, you're opening yourself up to attorney fees. If I'm your auto insurance and I deny coverage and they find that there was coverage, I'm open up to attorney fees. So I would wait for the insurance thing. This insurance product, oh, it's in the works, we'll get it done. No, wait for the insurance, because you know what? And I used to do settlement conferences with Judge Christina Lamar, and the average jury verdict for a bicyclist is $317,000. It's going to make a huge difference whether they get the $50,000 in coverage or the $1 million, depending on a hands-free application.
Can I just make a comment? And
yes.
Thank you for sticking around and testifying. Mm-hmm. I have to say that your testimony, combined with the research we've been doing in looking at user agreements, has been very sobering for me, because increasingly in an internet-based economy, one of the things you have to do is sort of routinely check a box saying, I agree to all the terms and conditions. Now, my guess is that a very small number of people actually pull up these 30-page documents and then sit down with their lawyer and accountant. And,
right.
But particularly with some of the so-called shared economy business models, the terms are not favorable to the consumer. They are written to shift liability and responsibility to away from the platforms and to either the driver or the host or whomever. And I share your concern, both because these things will be challenged, but they're written, they're pretty comprehensive and sweeping in terms of shifting liability. And now you've got this patchwork quilt. And to your point, there ought to be a certainty about what happens if the consumer is injured. We've got to just have some clear guidelines, not it depends on the lawyer, the judge, the time of day.
Right.
We ought to be able to know going in. And I say that as the proud parent of two kids who are likely to be using these services. And my interest is making sure that we know before they get in, what under the worst-case scenario, are they provided for? And I think that is our obligation. I do think at government, we ought to be clear about what that is.
Well, it sounds
before
like
we
there
give
will
someone
be
a green light to use a service, it may provide substantial risk.
Right. But it sounds like they will be covered in the vehicle. It's when they're trolling that there is not going to be any coverage if they hit a pedestrian, when they're looking to hit the app to accept it, and their eyes go off and they hit a bicyclist. That's where I see some of the issue. And then when they do accept the app, that they're limiting the coverage to only $50,000 per person.
Ms. Conover, we've heard that the insurance industry is contemplating these new products that will only apply when the app is on. Are you saying that that's unrealistic? Nobody will ever know whether the app is on or not?
Well, no, it comes to interpretation and arguing. I meant to turn it on. I mean, if you hit someone and you kill them and you didn't have your app on, what are you going to say? The battery went off. You're always going to try to find coverage. Deep pockets. City of Portland is a deep pocket. They sue everyone. I think you mentioned that earlier. They don't try to figure out. They just go ahead and sue everyone. And in the meantime, you have this person who's out of work, injured, in the hospital, and people are arguing, you cover it. No, you cover it. No, I'm not doing it. So you know that child in San Francisco who was struck down. You know, I kind of researched it. And what they'll say, oh, well, the insurance company for the driver, they took care of it. Well, guess what? Of course they did. They maybe they had a $50,000 policy, but you know how much you would spend to fight a coverage issue? So initially, I think these companies are going to roll over, but I bet you in 2 years they're going to be all sorts of verbiage. There is right now in these policies that I have, there is no coverage if you're charging for rides. There's no coverage under uninsured motorists or liability.
Thank you so much for staying to testify. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Welcome.
Hi there. I'm Wendy Dyer with Green Cab, and I'm sandwiched between two insurance people. So,
don't be nervous.
This will be a little change of pace for you, and I just want to thank you for being here and for the voices on council who have mentioned the underserved populations, because that's here what I'm going to talk to you about today. You know, it's pretty clear to me that not a lot of people care about saving the taxi industry or saving the taxi drivers. Pretty much it seems like all that anyone cares about is getting from point A to point B as fastest and cheapest as possible. We're in this era of electronic communication where that's what we want. Everything, faster, faster, more, more. You know, dialing a phone number just takes too long. Why? When I could just push one button and I get an Uber. You know, having to count cash or pull out my credit card, or heaven forbid I should have to sign a receipt. It's just too much for people these days. What I'm hoping is not too much for people these days is taking into consideration the class warfare world that we're in right now and the topic of equity, specifically with regards to equity for passengers. And there's just a lot of haves and have-nots, and that it's a growing gap, and we have a lot of that here in Portland. There are so many citizens who do not have smartphones or credit cards, that don't have mobility that do have mobility devices or guide dogs. There are so many citizens who live in less lucrative areas or take less lucrative short trips, and there's no equity for these people. So I ask you to keep in mind that there are folks who have wheelchair rides who need to get somewhere, and I'm very suspicious as to whether or not Uber's plan is going to work since it's failed in so many other jurisdictions. And those clients aren't going to get served by us, by Uber, like they will be by the taxi industry, who's been in compliant historically. And, you know, who's going to take your mom, your grandma, to the grocery store when it's a $2 fare? Uber's base fare is $5. Ours is $2.50. So this myth of them being so much more affordable, it's not affordable for grandma who's afraid of identity theft and doesn't want to use a credit card and has no idea how to use a computer or a smartphone. And just to revert back to those statistics briefly, Ms. Steger said that, what was it, 97% of Portlanders have a computer device, and that I believe statistically, nationally, 73% of the population has smartphones. What those statistics fail to acknowledge is that you can't take an online survey without a computer. You can't take a "do I have a smartphone" without a smartphone. And so I want you to remember that as a medical transportation driver working with salt of the earth people on the east side of town, most of them have Obama phones. If they're lucky, they go to the library to use a computer. They're not going to be able to order an Uber on the Obama phone or from the library. So I ask you to please hold the underserved people in Portland in your hearts. I know that I'm out there serving them every day, and I'm honored to do so.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome. Good evening.
Hi. My name is Dan DeGrange, and I work for Propel Insurance. And as a disclaimer, I'd like you to know that I insure all the taxi cab companies in Portland. But I'm also an expert in this commercial insurance versus personal insurance. I consulted with Mayor Kitty Piercy in Eugene and her risk managers and shared with her my concerns. So that took 2 hours. So in the next 2 minutes, I'm going to try to share with you some of my concerns. First, there's been a question as to whether or not personal line insurance, auto insurance policies cover risk, livery risk. And the answer is unequivocally no. It doesn't happen. I have a Safeco exclusion that reads, "We do not provide liability coverage for any insured's liability arising out of the ownership or the operation of a vehicle while it's being used as a public livery conveyance device. I think that Uber, as a result of knowing that these personal auto policies are not going to respond and pay claims, they came up with this contingent auto liability coverage that provides what I think are minuscule limits, $50,000, $125,000 limits, for claims that occur before the passengers have already been picked up, but while the app is turned on. I've insured taxi cab companies for 10 years in the city of Portland, so we have a lot of actuarial data on the types of claims that they have. And the information that we have shows that over 60% of all accidents that occur would be during this phase one period of time. In fact, some of the most horrific accidents that have happened in Portland were when the driver was in transit to pick up a passenger, not while they had a passenger. One of those claims was settled for $1 million, and the other claim was settled for almost $1.5 million. We are just grateful that our taxi cab companies were carrying as high limits as they were.
And sir, on that point, could you, because we're going to probably want to impose on you to ask if you could give us some follow-up information in writing, because this is extremely valuable. And one of the things that I'd like to know is what you consider, based on the actuarial data, to be a reasonable baseline of insurance. I'd also be interested in knowing what is the marginal cost of acquiring the stepped-up insurance. So, in other words, is it cost prohibitive or is it reasonable? And as someone who, because I have a 22-year-old daughter, tends to opt for the highest-end insurance limits because I'm worried about what could happen out there. You know, I think lowballing concerns me, but be interesting to know what you think and what you shared with Mayor Piercy was the right mix, and then what would be sort of the cost dynamic.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and propose what the city of Portland should have for liability limits. But in today's day and age, and Cynthia can talk to this issue, a few days in the hospital, you're going to exceed that limit of $50,000.
Well, I'm not asking you to pitch a policy or go beyond your role, but to the extent you've looked at some data and you believe that best practice is in a certain range, or to the extent in insuring taxi companies, you've made a judgment that there's a prudent level of insurance, I think that's useful information.
Right. Well, I think a prudent amount would be what the city is requiring in the city of Portland, and that's $500,000. But what I'll tell you is that most of the taxi cab companies in the city of Portland actually carry higher than $1 million limits. So I think that's the prudent thing to do, is to protect the public in the case of a horrific accident. And I think one of your questions is, how much more does that cost? And I think you'll be surprised that we recently got a quote for $500,000 limit for a taxi cab company, and the approximate cost was $6,000. To add the additional $500,000 worth of coverage, it only added $800 to $900 to the total cost to insure that cab. So
it's not cost prohibitive.
It's
unless
not
you have
cost
a lot of accidents
prohibitive.
In a minute.
So I think what's prudent is that everybody in the city of Portland that are operating a commercial auto should have at least $500,000 limits. Most of the trucking companies that I insure carry $4 or $5 million limits, but livery, I think $500,000 is a prudent amount.
So, do you think that drivers should be required to carry that, whether the app is on or off? Just if you spend some of your time as a TNC driver, then you need to have $500,000 coverage at all times, regardless of whether the app is on or off.
When the app is turned on. Right now, they're only going to provide $50,000 and $100,000 limit, right? And then $25,000 for property damage. Those are too low of limits.
I'm just asking about whether the whether there can be a, you think there can be a distinction when the app is just off.
When the app is off, and Cynthia's addressed this, is the driver going to be forthright and say, well, I meant to turn the app on, right? Or are they going to, are we going to have a personal auto carrier pointing fingers at the commercial auto carrier and say, we don't want to pay this claim? We see that a lot. We see it too much.
Are you saying that you don't think that is a reasonable distinction to make, that if you are spending any of your time as a TNC driver, then you need to have at all times a $500,000 worth of coverage?
I think that's a sufficient amount of insurance.
I agree. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The next three are Jake Oja, John Orr, and Erica Jones. And they'll be followed by Nona Carrasco, Jeanette Thiebert, and Rob Brower.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
I'm Jake Oja, and I work for Propel Insurance as well. And, you know, piggybacking on a lot of what Dan or Cynthia said, Uber is on a campaign to make city officials believe their new insurance product is going to address a lot of the concerns that have been raised today. So obviously they're concerned as well. But as of today and any time in the foreseeable future, there's not an insurance product offered in the state of Oregon that's going to provide such coverage. You know, all the companies we insure are required to provide certificates of liability to the city of Portland, who they name as an additional insured. And this provides the city of Portland with coverage arising out of the operations of these taxi cab companies. It's also a requirement of the city of Portland to be notified by the insurance company if the taxi cab company's policies lapses. So, you know, as Dan said, we insure taxi cab companies not only in Portland, but all over the western United States. We've yet to see Uber's insurance policy name a city as an additional insured, and I'm confident no personal lines insurance company would be willing to name the city of Portland as an additional insured. You know, as a concerned citizen that also understands insurance, you know, I suggest you consult with the excellent risk managers you employ and ask them if they believe Uber's limits of liability are sufficient to protect the public and the city of Portland. And, you know, I also humbly suggest contacting the city of Boise, city of Eugene, to find out why they required Uber to provide the same level of insurance protection that you require of the livery companies that serve this community. You know, and I've heard the phrase that Uber is a technology company and not a livery company, but quite frankly, that's a kind of a fancy sales pitch that I don't buy. You know, they contract people to move people, and that's no different than what Radio Cab or Broadway Cab or any of the other taxi companies do in this city. And that's all I really want to say. There's a time limit here, and that's as fast as I can do it.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is John Orr. I'm proud to drive for Radio Cab, and I'm really concerned about the safety issues that have been just the tragedies that have happened all over because of Uber's powerful lobbying to be exempt from them. So, for example, we've got a couple phones here. Hypothetically, this could be my friend's phone or my friend's car, and I could drive under my friend's profile. And no one would know. You've got a picture on someone's smartphone the size of a fingernail. As long as I look remotely like them from a block away, No one's going to know that's not their driver. Okay. I've got a 2x2 photo here on my permit that's displayed in my cab at all times. So anybody can ask to see that at any time during a cab ride. And these TNCs act like safety is built into their app. They just have good PR people. It's not safe. It could be anybody giving you a ride. You can create an account and have your friend drive under it and then completely bypass even Uber's weak background check process that they lobby to make weaker and different than the current cab industry background process. Okay, as to the insurance, app on, app off, let me ask you, is this legal driving? Okay, just turn my app on, but I'm using my cell phone while I'm on the road. So, oh, and that might have just hit somebody. So, I mean, I think that could be considered negligent when they're to use their system, you have to use your phone while you're on the road. And I don't think realistically they're going to pull over and find a parking spot to accept a ride. They're going to be on the road driving in traffic, and they're going to look down at their small screen, and they're going to hit accept, and oh, the phone's not working, I'm going to keep hitting. And they're going to kill people. They're going to cause accidents. There's going to be tragedies like there have been in other cities as a result of different, weaker, special standards being supplied because they come in here and, you know, have slick lobbyists and try and get special treatment. I hope the city doesn't buy it.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good evening.
Good evening. good evening, City Council. My name is Erica Jones. I'm a driver for Radio Cab Company in Portland. The reason the cab industry is regulated in Portland by the city is to make sure that every cab is safe and their drivers are vetted. We play by rules that are set by the city, and it ensures that the companies follow rules on insurance and safety and making sure all their drivers are permitted by a thorough completely thorough background check. It does not matter what license cab you get into. The cab has been safety inspected. They all have the same minimum safety equipment designed to protect the occupants as well as other road users. And the meters are all set to the same standard, ensuring a fair price for the ride. Great. excuse me.
The phone could do that while you're on the Uber app also. On, app on.
This is called a level playing field. The only difference between the companies then is the personality and the integrity of the drivers. When Uber arrived on the scene, they, as you know, were operating illegally. They did not have vehicles inspected for safety by the city. They did not have any of their drivers vetted by a thorough city background check. They did not have they did not have the same pricing structure as set by the city, and they did not have vehicles specially built to carry our disabled citizens, like the city mandates that the cab companies do. So right off the bat, Uber told the city that we've got $40 billion and we're special and we ain't playing by your rules. We're going to do as we please. That's a giant slap in the face. Thankfully, the city stopped this abhorrent business practice from being played in our fair city. I'm asking you, city council members, to please rethink that if Uber should be allowed to enter this market, given their past practice of not following the rules set by you, the city council, they cannot and will not be able to maintain service to an entire class of people who have special needs because they do not have the equipment. They cannot service the disabled, which seems rather discriminatory to me. And let me tell you, as a transsexual, I know quite about discrimination. I live it 24/7. Uber will rape the public with their surge pricing. They will not have city background checks. Their vehicles will not be safety checked by the city. How is this fair? It's not fair. It's not right. And it's not just bloody good enough. Keep this thuggish company out of our community and let the professionals in this room here today do what we do best. We serve Portland and its residents. We do it better, we do it safer, and we do it cheaper. Our community's safety, our jobs, and our local economy depends upon it. Please do the right thing. Keep it safe, keep it local, and keep it fair.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Questions for this group?
May I add something just
sure, quickly?
The safety concerns I addressed would easily be covered, and with the capital these companies have, they could easily afford what marked vehicles and cameras in the vehicles. And their practice is to pass all the costs on to drivers. But if they cared, truly cared about the safety of their riders, They would be willing to cover those expenses themselves if they want to put on as many drivers as they do, and they would pay for a camera to be installed in each of their driver's car for the safety of their driver and of the passengers.
Absolutely.
And they would require and possibly pay for marked vehicles, permanently marked vehicles, so you couldn't have somebody pose as an Uber and take advantage of intoxicated people at bar close.
Thank you very much.
I do have one question. Erica, where in England are you from?
I'm from a small village called London.
No, which bit of London?
I thought you could English people could I was always
trying to,
tell.
Well, I was going to guess. Which part of London?
I'm from the northwest, Harrow.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. That was close.
Thank you very much.
The next three are Nona Carrasco, Jeanette Thiebert, and Rob Brower. And they'll be followed by John Hopkins, Ed Jones, and Charlene Hill.
Welcome. Go ahead. You can be first.
My name is Nona Carrasco.
You just get a little closer to the mic if you can. There you go. Thanks.
Okay, so I've got a little bit of chicken scratches here. So, like I said, I'm Nona Carrasco, and I am a driver for Radio Cab. So I moved here in 1997, and I didn't really want to move here. I was a little nervous about moving to this city that I didn't know anywhere, or I didn't know anybody from. And it didn't take long for me to completely fall in love with everything that Portland is. And I'm going to touch base on the level that Portland embraces keeping local as a community, like buying local, supporting local businesses. This is one of the things that I have found has really set apart Portland from many of the cities that I've lived in and traveled to. The taxi industry is part of that local community that we have. All of the taxi companies here in Portland are locally owned, operated, and driven by people in our community. Every dollar that comes through our local cab companies, that stays local. We service the public, our communities, and in turn, we spend that money here in Portland as people in our community. As a lease driver at Radio Cab, $10 of my lease goes to Radio Cab, and the rest of that goes to the shareholder that is whose share is attached to the cab that I drive. That shareholder is a local driver because we are driver-owned, and that shareholder also pays a weekly kitty to Radio Cab. This is local money, and this is local economy. With Uber, 20 to 28% of every dollar that you give your driver, depending on the service that you are requesting, plus that $1 safe ride fee that they talk about, this leaves our local economy, and it goes to Uber, which is a $40 billion company based in San Francisco, California. If Uber is allowed to flood the streets of Portland, undercutting the rates that cab companies have, that are set for cab companies, they are not only taking business away from people in our own community who sometimes struggle to make ends meet with the rates as they stand, but up to 28% of that money is taken to California. This is by no means the keeping it local that Portlanders take pride in. So really, to allow or even invite Uber into our community is not thinking about the community at all, nor the local economy, but the deeper pockets that Uber is filling in order to overrun our city.
Thank you.
Ms. Carrasco, you said $10 goes to Radio Cab. That's $10 out of how much?
It depends on the night that I drive, because I am a night driver. I drive Sunday through Wednesday, and my lease is $95 a night. $10 goes to Radio Cab. If I drive on a Friday or Saturday, my lease could be up to $125. Still, only $10 goes to Radio Cab.
So it's about 10% or less rather than 20 to 25%?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. Welcome.
Good evening. My name's Jeanette Thiebert. Probably 12 years or a little better, I've been driving a taxi cab. Before that, I worked with mentally ill adults in drug and alcohol treatment. I drive one of those very large wheelchair-accessible vans that we talk about. I can talk about that at some other point. Today, I just want to remind you that once upon a time, the citizens of Portland crafted one of the best citizen-owned electric companies in the country. We called it PGE. Utility rates were regulated and stable, and it was good for the people of Portland. One day, someone exclaimed, "Why is the city in the utility business?" And so PGE was sold. It became the crown jewel of Enron's holdings. Rates went up, and the municipal utility taxes or user fees that Enron collected from the citizens were misappropriated and stayed in Enron's bank account rather than being sent to the city. Local PGE employees took wage cuts and lost their retirements and then their jobs. Enron, like Uber, was an out-of-state corporation that refused to play by the rules. In short, Enron stole from Portlanders. We're talking, let's be clear. This isn't about giving Portlanders new technology options. As cab drivers, we've been using similar cell phone apps to schedule and track rides for over a year, sometimes more. This is about an out-of-state company with $40 billion of venture capital giving subprime loans to our neighbors to buy cars, with no promise that to these new drivers that their new income will meet their expenses. This is taking from Portland. It's about taking the data about who we are, how we travel, where we're going, and when. It's about taking the profits out of our local economy. And it's about consuming our resources, our time, our energy, okay? And they're bullying our civic leaders to do so. This isn't the Portland I grew up in. This is the land of Oswald West and Tom McCall, two individuals who saw the future and recognized that sometimes being progressive means saying no. It means having the best interests of everyone in our community at heart. And it means standing up with courage to take action. You have a choice today. This vote may be your legacy. It will certainly affect your family, your children, and your grandchildren, if you're so lucky. I'm asking you to have the courage to vote this down. And of all things, the caps are there for a reason. We now have the 10th worst traffic in the country. Do you really think that adding another 2,000 individuals who are hobbyists driving for people and doing the job that 500 to a couple thousand drivers have had living wage jobs doing, do you really think that adding that many more vehicles on the road is going to solve our traffic congestion? The reason it's going to be so quick to get another car is because they're everywhere, and traffic's going to be that much worse. We're not solving the problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And if you want, the fishing industry is a commercial industry near and dear to this community, and it is highly regulated and capped.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. And thank you for your time. I appreciate having the opportunity to speak, and I just want to say that these young people are the people that make me happy. I'm a second-generation radio cab.
Give us your name, too.
My name is Rob Brower.
Thank you, Rob.
I have grown up in the city of Portland. I live and breathe Oregon. There's I've tried to search for things that people haven't said already, and so I'll keep mine brief, but I challenge you to understand, and maybe the task force can help. There's no numbers thrown out about the number of drivers that Uber's going to put on the street. They're afraid to put their names on the permits that we fill out every year at city, and pay our